It's great to welcome into the studio my final guest for this afternoon. We've got from Woodfines, we've got Nigel Ashton from the private client department at Woodfines. Very good afternoon to you, Nigel. And we also have Vicky Moss and Helen Jameson. They're both case managers with Anglia Case Management. So very good afternoon to you ladies as well.
Hello. Afternoon.
All right, so we're talking today about the Court of Protection. I'm guessing a lot of people are going to go, what is that? So Nigel, as a starter, what is the Court of Protection and when would people tend to come across it?
Well, in that sense, I hope nobody does have to come into contact with the Court of Protection, but sadly they will, or they will for one or more of their relatives. And the Court of Protection is a court which makes decisions, financial or welfare decisions, on behalf of people who can't make those decisions for themselves. So typically, in a typical situation, someone who's maybe father or mother may have dementia and is unable, for example, to sell their house.
Oh, right.
or make other decisions, and there is no power of attorney in place, which means that they're stuck. And in order to be able to take that forward and to make a decision on their parents' behalf, they have to make an application to the Court of Protection to be appointed as their father or their mother's deputy.
Right. So as somebody who obviously you must get involved with lasting powers of attorney, we'll see them coming through quite regularly. Does it sometimes happen then that the person is too ill for then a lasting
yes.
power of attorney
yes.
to be? It's like, oh my goodness, we need to do
yes.
something.
Yes.
Sorry, too late. Is that?
That's right. Sometimes they've passed the threshold, as it were, whereby they are no longer able to understand what they're signing or to be able to give that authority, that power of attorney to someone. It's just too late. So that the moral is always to make it sooner rather than later.
My goodness, yeah, absolutely. So we're talking really, this is highlighting necessity for things like wills and things like that.
Wills is slightly different, but obviously that's on death. But a power of attorney is to give authority to someone whilst you're still alive in order to be able to make those decisions. If the time ever comes, if it ever does, when you are unable to make those decisions for yourself, and if you haven't made one of those, and that time does come, sadly, then it's the Court of Protection who gets involved.
Okay, now let's bring in Vicky and Helen on this one. So where would you get involved, ladies? Because you're from Anglia Case Management. Where do you get involved with Courts of Protection?
So we work with clients who've had catastrophic life-changing injuries, and we come on board to work clinically with clients, and we would then liaise with a deputy who manages the property and financial affairs for our clients and provide them with clinical justification for why certain amounts of money might need to be spent on therapies, equipment, housing, that sort of thing.
Right, because that's the thing, isn't it? Quite often you'll be faced with financial changes in a city. It's all very well, you know, if someone's had an accident or something like that, motorbike accidents, things like that. Actually, everything changes, doesn't it? The budgets all change. The needs change of that individual.
It does, and they can be quite large expenses.
Yes.
And the deputy will obviously need to justify to the Court of Protection why money is being spent. And so it's helpful for them to have a real clinical reasoning as to why are we spending this? Why does it need to be spent? We quite often compare quotes and things like that. So we provide the deputy with as much information as we can to assist them with making decisions on behalf of the client.
Okay. And one of the other things you were mentioning before we came on air was, of course, children who are born straight away, babies born with damage.
Yes, so again, we work with people who have acquired brain injuries at birth, and when we come on board, it would be a similar scenario that we're involved. So we would be coordinating therapies, rehab support, and providing the deputy with information about expenditures for that client and the clinical reasoning for it. So it's kind of our role is an interface between the clinical side and solicitors, kind of providing information and orchestrating a programme of rehab and support.
Yeah, absolutely. And trying to work with the family and the client to live their life the way they want to.
Yeah.
And get them back to maybe where they were before they had their accident, or as close to as they could do.
Right. Crikey. Often when we think of going to court and things like that, we always think of you guys, it's adversarial. Is it an adversarial environment, or is it actually usually quite an empathic environment that you're working in?
Most people who come in contact with the Court of Protection, it will be purely a paper exercise,
right,
where you submit applications in the post and it crosses someone's desk, a judge's desk or an officer's desk, and they will issue an order maybe appointing you as the deputy. So most people will never darken the doors of the court. If you are unfortunate enough to be involved in a dispute with someone else in relation to someone or a decision that needs to be made, then there may be an attended hearing, but it is usually much more informal than what people may associate with a court, so there's no wigs involved.
Right.
So it's much more relaxed and informal, but it is a court that makes orders which are binding in that sense, but it's much more, as I say, informal and less adversarial in that sense.
And does it tend to be an ongoing process? Because I'm guessing, again, with injuries in particular, with people who are affected by those, think the circumstances change, don't they? The conditions change, but maybe it deteriorates, maybe people... Is that left to you to work out as case managers with the client, or do you have to go back to the court every time to get the nod?
So the clients that we work with, it's to do with whether you have the mental capacity, so as Nigel was saying earlier, whether you can actually understand the decisions that you're making, weigh up the information and make decisions. Capacity can change. So for some of our clients, very soon post-injury, they may not have the mental capacity to manage their financial affairs. They might not be able to make those decisions for themselves. But actually, as they recover, it may be that they regain that capacity. And so mental capacity would be assessed and kind of reassessed along the line. Because everybody wants to empower the individual to make choices for themselves if they're able to do so. So for some clients, they don't regain capacity and would always have a deputy kind of protecting their funds and acting on their behalf. For other clients, they do regain it, and a mental capacity assessment would be done to say that they've regained that assessment, and then they would no longer need a deputy acting for them.
And sometimes people who may have, for example, a mental illness who can't cope with making bigger decisions may well live on their own and lead a normal life and make most of their decisions themselves from day to day, but they may still have a deputy who is there to make some of the bigger decisions and just to make sure that things tick over well, and especially for vulnerable clients, they're able there to be that support network for them. So it isn't always, you know, they give up everything or they do everything. And as with capacity, there are numerous shades of grey. It's never black or white. And people dip in and out of losing capacity, or they may regain capacity. So it's never, you know, it's never certain. That's often the problem with capacity.
Is there a point at which, as you say, perhaps if capacity regains, is there a point at which they can actually, you have to step in and go, no. This is still the way, because maybe this is like a temporary regaining of capacity, and actually with age or with whatever, it's going to get away. Do you ever have to step in that way and go, just a minute, before you start signing your own checks?
Occasionally, yes. Occasionally, sometimes people want to make an investment which is just totally inappropriate, and they may put forward their views as to what they want to do, but actually you have to say to them, look, this is wholly inappropriate for what you're wanting to do. And hopefully they will see that, and talking face to face, you'll be able to persuade them that isn't in their best interest.
But I guess in that case, you really are looking after their interests all the time,
yes,
aren't you?
That's right. Sometimes there may be, as I say, sometimes you may have to call in an expert to say, well, actually, this person wants to buy a house, but actually or wants to buy a business and wants to buy whatever it happens to be, but you might say, well, I actually don't think they are able to make that decision. He or she won't take my word for it, but could you come in and carry out an assessment?
That must be really quite tough at times when you are seeing it from your point of view, and you know how people may feel. It's a very emotional time for anybody, I guess, isn't it, whenever anybody is incapacitated in that way?
Yes, and of course it's there's a fear of the unknown. You become there's vulnerability, a fear of what may lie ahead, and as people are less able to make those decisions that they've always made in the past for themselves, then it's going to also be distressing for them as well. So you're trying to help them cope with changing circumstances, which can be very difficult for them.
Okay, and what are the typical pitfalls that people make? Do people sort of try and deal with things on their own? Do you find you're sort of coming into the game a bit late, or what mistakes do people make when getting involved with you guys and with the courts?
I'm trying to think of certain ones. Sometimes borrowing money can be a bit of a problem if they've gone on a bit of a spending spree and made loans that they can't repay, or they're just not making decisions. And so it does their actions, court cases threatened against them, actions threatened against them, which can be quite serious. But you're trying to cover that and trying to regain ground that has been lost because of the decisions either that they've made or not made. Yeah. And so you're trying to step in and trying to prevent court action being taken against them.
How about you, ladies?
I would say some of the pitfalls might be around the person's brain injury that they've had, and maybe some issues around impulsivity. So making very quick snap decisions that may then go on, and you catch it at a certain point down the line when actually it'd be quite useful to have caught it a little bit earlier. Nothing's, at the end of the day, you're trying to work in somebody's best interests. Mm. So you're working very closely with that person to kind of say, hold on a sec, let's just take a bit breath, take a bit slower and kind of work through these problems and that process.
Okay, and often I guess you're working with relatives. So is it easy for relatives to perhaps get in touch with you guys and have a consultation away from the person involved? Or how would people best contact you to just get a feel for where they're at?
Yes, relatives can always contact us. Sometimes it's a two-edged sword with relatives. Sometimes,
yes, I can imagine.
Sometimes those who lack capacity sadly are abused by those nearest to them financially, which is very difficult to be able to sort out the mess from. But in other terms, people will contact you and ask for advice. Is it too late to make a lasting power of attorney? Or if it is, what do we do next? How can we take this forward? And so it's good to give advice in those circumstances.
And ladies?
For the majority of the clients that we work with, we'd have quite good communication with their family members. Obviously, we always have to respect the confidentiality of the client. And some of our clients will say that they don't want us to discuss matters with relatives, but that doesn't stop us listening to the relatives' concerns, even if we have to be careful about the information we can share in return. I would say we're always open to hearing concerns.
Absolutely. You would talk to the people that know the client the best, if that person has very complex health needs and, physical learning disabilities and things like that because of their level of brain injury. So it's about being that person that talks to everybody and kind of gets that view of everybody and kind of balancing it up with what the views of the client is as well.
It's a real trick, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, so for people listening, we keep coming up with this phrase, lasting power of attorney, but for some people that's, well, hang on a minute, I'm signing everything away. Are they? Well, if I decide that this is going to be a sensible thing, I mean, here I am in my, I was going to say late 20s, but no one's going to believe that. Here I am in my late 50s, and now, in theory, I've still got all my marbles. So am I able now, I could make a lasting power of attorney to my partner.
Yes.
Would I at that point be going, right, I've just given her a blank check to ride roughshod over my life?
No.
Right.
In short answer, no. And there's an argument for saying that everyone in retirement or approaching retirement should have a lasting power of attorney. You're certainly not signing away your ability to deal with your own affairs. What you are doing is saying that should that ever happen, should the need ever arise where I can't make that decision for myself, then I know that there is someone who I trust, who will be able to make those decisions for me.
Right. And I guess like all these things, I mean, I still meet people today who I've known for a long time who tell me, no, we've not made a will. And obviously people think it makes you die sooner or something. I don't know. There can't be an excuse for it in my book. But it is one of those things that really the minority have them and the majority don't, I'm guessing.
I think the statistics speak for themselves. But it's a bit like life assurance. People don't think by taking out life assurance they're going to die.
Mm.
And it's the same with the will. It's one of those things which at sometime they should do it, but usually people leave it too late. And they should be making them sooner than they actually do.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, at a time when your families are really suffering, if you've at least sorted your affairs out and written it down, at least it is making it all a little bit easier for
isn't
it?
That's so right.
Excellent. Ladies, any final advice from you for people? Because as you were saying, often it's sudden changes in circumstances, isn't it? It's things like motorbike accidents and as you say, possibly in cases where children are born with problems already. Is there anything anybody can do to just kind of alleviate, just minimise their risks and problems?
I would say engage your support networks. There's plenty of people and groups and, you know, loads of people out there that you can go to for support and advice in those difficult situations. And the sooner you get that advice and support, the sooner you can start kind of working towards a better outcome for everybody.
All right, lovely. OK, well, look, if you want to get in touch with either of these two teams, you've got Nigel Ashton. He's with the private client team at Woodfines. You can get hold of him at woodfines.co.uk. He's at the, you're at the Cambridge office, aren't you, Nigel?
Yes.
So it's Cambridge 411421. Or you can just go to, say, to woodfines.co.uk and you'll find him there. Vicky and Helen, you're with Anglia Case Management, which is angliacasemanagement.co.uk. Is that right?
That's right.
And you're based out of Bury St Edmunds?
We are, yes.
Super. All right. Well, listen, thank you all for coming in this afternoon. There we are. As I say, if you want more details, it's on the website. If you've only come in halfway through that conversation, it will be available as a podcast in the next couple of days on Cambridge105.co.uk.